was a real downer for him. He was having trouble seeing in the car driving at night. That was something that was difficult. So there was a whole list of things going on, health wise, that were sort of creeping up. But on the positive end, I'm trying to think. Hang on a second. I'm trying to think of other things he used to do. Before the RC planes, he also used to fly the tow line planes. Was something he used to do, gasoline. And lately, with all the RC planes we have now are all electric, because the motor efficiency has gotten to the point where you can actually fly for a longer period of time with battery than you can with gas, and there's a whole lot less residue. So I'm actually thinking of buying an electric mower, because the lawn mower is toast. There's a whole bunch of things that need to change. But for the first time, I'm actually seriously considering buying a battery-powered motor for the first time, mower for the first time, because it appears it's less maintenance. So the only thing you have to worry about really is the battery and maybe keeping the mower from rusting or something. Back to you. This is KB2IQN.
KC2RFM. Was he losing his ability to be joyful as time went on? Was it just getting older affecting his ability to really be joyful?
Well, I don't mind talking about this, although it's a little bit unpleasant in terms of the purposes for the evening. But I'll mention this is like, he was having definite memory issues. He was having trouble remembering certain words, even when looking at a page of those words. This is something he was really stressed out about concerning the TechNet, because he was able to remember things from long ago, but memory of short-term memory was definitely getting to be difficult. He was definitely having eyesight issues, very strongly. So he was, the only way he could read was with a magnifying glass and a flashlight, for instance. So even during the day, even when it was bright outside, he'd be using a flashlight to read. So it was that difficult. He had looked into a whole lot of detail about cataract surgery, and one of his main concerns was getting the lenses that were flexible. And he had talked to people on the ham radio about getting the lenses that were flexible, because apparently, like, lens changing is a requirement for cataract surgery, or the cataract surgery that he needed. So there's an umpteen, printed pages of various health-related study and documentation. Let me drop for a second. But along with the memory and other difficulties, there was something else going on where he was definitely paranoid about certain things in the house failing. Like, he was really, really worried that the heating system was leaking some type of toxic gas, because he was very, very dizzy. He was constantly complaining about being dizzy, and some of the medication he was taking was medication that was one of the side effects, was dizziness. And he was extremely concerned about this, and I was absolutely sure there was nothing wrong with the heating system, that there was no, like, nothing that was leaking. He had called the fire department and had the air test for poisonous gases. They cleared it. I think he called a second time to make sure it wasn't another type of poison. I think he was worried about sulfur dioxide, and he was concerned that it could have a cumulative effect. There's a whole list of things that were odd going on like that for some time. So Yeah, it was really difficult.
You're certainly not alone in that thinking. I actually did the same thing in my house. I had the gas company come and test for anything that might be leaching into the air that may have been affecting me. So it's interesting to hear you say that. I went through exactly the same thing, but once they came in and cleared it out, I guess it was just something else. Maybe just getting older, who knows. But apparently it really affected your dad quite a bit. He's like a celebrity. We don't have to go down that route. I wasn't trying to pry. I just want to add a little more color to the voice, you know, a little more of the man to the voice I've known. Even though I've met and talked with him multiple times, I realized I really never knew him that well. I remember when I had been at the award ceremony, my girlfriend and I were there, and I said, hey, let's get together and go and do something. And he's pretty straightforward, you know, saying, well, I really don't do that much, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. He just wasn't comfortable with it. And I didn't take that personally. I could see he meant that. You know, that was just the way he is. But I'd wondered if he was just in general found things that made him happy. Obviously, the TechNet did. But, I mean, things that you look forward to. You say you didn't take a vacation. And, you know, that's kind of a way to break out of your normal routine and find things that are joyful and, you know, new things and then enjoy them and then go back to the routine. And he cut himself out from that. It's sad to hear. By the way, I did meet your mom. She was a very, very nice woman. Is she still there? Is she still awake?
I believe she's still awake, but whenever I transmit, I think the receiver descent is cutting out the radio in the other room. So when I transmit, I think she's going to need to hear that from the stream. Hang on one second. My father talked about taking a vacation to go on a cruise, but we never did it. But yeah, I don't know. Things he used to do. Like he was having a real difficulty figuring out something to do that would for a break in routine. The thing he really most connected with was talking to people about technical things, which is not something you can easily do in regular walks of life. So socially, it was a little bit difficult for him to discuss normal, like quote unquote normal things, like you know emotions or relationships or family. Those are things he found more difficult to navigate. So I can understand how, like, you know, he may come across as I don't know, not necessarily, he didn't have an easy time connecting to people, even though he could, he didn't have an easy time of it.
Man, you would never know it to meet him, see, because at least I never would have thought that. He was swamped by people, and wasn't easy to keep him in a conversation because everybody wanted to talk to him, and he seemed perfectly willing and happy to speak to people as well and go into many levels of depth. Let me throw one more question at you, and I don't want to you know, steal the show here, but was your father entrepreneurial? Would you say he was interested in that? I mean, he certainly had almost a superpower. And did he ever express a desire to apply that to business, you know, invent something, sell it, or get it out there on the market for people to use, you know, not necessarily for the money because most inventors learn very fast that you don't make a lot of money, but if people use your invention, that's the gold right there. Did he engage in that?
There were at least two instances in which he was trying to actually take something into a business, and he had talked to several business partners that had their own businesses about doing it. One was a relatively difficult test to do for a problem with cell phones that would happen at night. which I think got mitigated some other way. It was going to be a difficult proposition to do for several reasons. It was going to have to be like pulse testing, you know, very rapid for short, like short bursts. It's going to be really weird. The other one was a detector method, which there was a, essentially it was a very sensitive amplifier that could eliminate its own feedback to the point of where you could walk into a room and it would it would sense the change in capacitance of the room with you of you walking into it, to the point where like it would know that someone had walked in. That wasn't the purpose of it. The purpose of it was another type of detector where it could have been a replacement for a CCD, for a different kind of camera, where it could have done via capacitance what that does optically. That was a couple of things that, you know, he had opportunities, but they were both very tricky for different reasons. So neither one of them actually panned out. He actually tried at least one of them, but the product like didn't work out.
So you have a tight ham room. Did he have a separate electronics room?
Yeah, the ham room is basically its own. Yeah, it's all the electronics are in here, if that's what you mean.
I mean, he come up with designs and development, and then you know, put together prototypes, things like that.
Well, when it came to the antenna that he designed, he had designed that years ago. He had made lots of them. He had made an array of them. He had put it up on the tower. It had gotten ripped down from a guy wire getting hit by a tree from Hurricane Gloria. So that got the tower got yanked, and that whole array of 16 Yagis came crashing down. He had plans for a very large fly swatter for 10 gigahertz, a 10 gigahertz setup. He had a whole bunch of traveling wave tubes, but no power supplies for them, I believe. So he's got a bunch of traveling wave tube amplifiers, but nothing to power it with, as I believe it. He has a whole lot of science experiments in a closet that used to be out on the a coffee table that was in the living room for various high voltage things that he was testing. There was a whole lot of things. He didn't really do a lot of soldering or prototyping and design work at home. Not much. He mostly did a lot of that at work.
Of course, he had a department he could do it at. Because, right? I mean, a lot of what he would discuss was testing equipment. So I always envisioned that, sort of like John, he just had a room filled with all these, exotic, super testing equipment for electronics that he was working on. But, of course, I imagine he did have all that and more in the places that he worked in. So, yeah, fascinating. I don't want to eat up all the time. Roy, are you still awake?
Yeah, I'm still awake, Alan. It's fine. Do your thing. You're a good interviewer. I'm not that nosy.
Yeah, Chris, I don't want to come across like I was cross-examining.
Wait, DJ.
Yes, Dave?
Yeah, I've been listening. It's great. Good stuff. And I got a quick story to tell Chris and the net as well. Please, go. So, I guess it's about 25 years ago. Your dad, myself, and Mike Cosma, what's Mike called? WY2U. And we all shared the interest in astronomy and had telescopes and binoculars and things like that. So we actually were able to get together one night to do some observing. we all met down at Cedar Creek Park in South Seaford area. And you might be familiar with that area. In the back, they have the aerodrome where they fly the radio control planes and stuff like that. So at night, it's basically off limits. You know, you're not allowed to be back there. But I had some connections, and we were able to get back there. So we're doing our observing. We have our telescope set up. It's nice and quiet. It's all dark. It's, you know, we're back there where we're not supposed to be. And here comes a police helicopter flying around, and somehow they spotted us down there. And they came back around and started to come down pretty low to the ground and put the big spotlight on us to see, what are these people doing? And, you know, we waved them off. We said hello, whatever, and they left. But it was kind of fun. I don't know if your dad ever mentioned that to you.
The name Mike Cosma sounds very familiar. I've heard that name a bunch. No, I don't think I ever heard that story at all. I remember him going on certain astronomy events. He used to go to astronomy meetings at Stony Brook. He would go to astronomy meetings, like, you know, talking about various talks. Sometimes he'd go to astronomy meets to do observations. It was one of the things he used to enjoy. He has a few telescopes here of various sizes. He hasn't used them in years. On occasion, we've seen some odd things in the sky that, you know, that we wonder what they are. Because they don't look like airplanes. They're too stationary. They're not clouds. They're not weather balloons and so forth. So once in a blue moon, like we like talking about that. He's got one of the things he used to really enjoy was to use a telescope to look at the sun, to see the corona from the sun, and he had a filter for that that he would use on the front of the telescope for that purpose. So those are some other things that he used to like doing that he hadn't done in a long time. KB2IQN.
And 2APG. Yeah, good stuff. I remember going to Stony Brook for one of the lectures one night, and he basically invited other people. Because he had been going to them, and I wasn't aware of it. He said, "No, why don't you come on up? You know, it's a good lecture and this and that. And, you know, we'll say hello." And he was up there the one night, and it was funny because he, Dad, liked to ask a lot of questions of the person that was giving the, you know, the presentation, the lecture. You know, usually some very smart scientist or astronomer or somebody special, you know, who's giving the lecture. And so not only would your dad ask questions, but he would whip out his green laser pointer, and he would point at the, you know, whatever was up on the board to the lecturer. He'd say, "Well, what about this and this over here? I'm referring to this," you know, and he would point with the laser pointer, and it was pretty funny.
Yeah, it's funny. He bought me one of those as well, and I ended up using it as for presentation material. And he talked about the fact that it was a direct green laser, and, like, you know, it was just the same, like, 5 or 10 milliwatts, like the red, except the green is optimized for you know, the reaction for the eye, and that's why it looks a whole lot brighter, because it's not brighter, it's just like your eye picks it up easier. So yeah, he used to talk about that a bunch. Sounds like exactly like something he would do. So it's really funny how, like, other people can just simply describe things he would do, and I'm like, "Yep, that's my dad." Like, you know, there were a bunch of things he did that were relatively unique that way.
Yeah, well, he certainly had a certain way about him. Now, I'm going to ask you a question, and this is something that I've always been very curious about and never really got a chance to ask your dad about it, but I think I never saw him at a ham fest or an occasion or whatever. He was always wearing black shirt, black pants, black hat, always black. It reminded me of Roy Orbison because it's just black. And I never found out, like, what that was about. If maybe you know, I don't know. It just seemed to be black. Never blue jeans, never a different color shirt. Everything was black.
Well, typically he wore black jeans because they sort of look like dress pants. So this way you could go to work in jeans and they'd look like pants. That's at least my understanding for what the black jeans is about. But in terms of shirts, he had all kinds of colored shirts. He had like red and yellow and blue and black and blue. Like he had all different colored shirts. So if he chose to wear black to go to Hamfest, I wasn't aware of it, but it also wouldn't surprise me because he might have had some like comfort reason for doing that. But if there is a reason, I don't know it.
Oh, okay. That's pretty funny that you mentioned he has other colored shirts because I was certain you were going to say, yeah, his closet is just full of black shirts. That's all he ever wore was black shirts because that's the only thing I ever saw him in. So it's kind of interesting that he had red and yellow and other colored shirts.
Yeah, what you were describing almost sounds like the movie The Fly from Jeff Goldblum, where like, you know, he goes into his closet and it's exactly like, you know, 10 of the exact same suit with shirts. But my father didn't do that. It was nothing like that. He had very good clothes. He had blue jeans. It wasn't like he only had black jeans. It's just like he mostly had black jeans. I didn't see anything white or, you know, light colored, but whatever. But yeah, he just, you know, he tended to, I tended to look more at the fact that he liked short sleeve dress shirts rather than, like, you know, than the colors. He had lots of different ties over the years, as you can imagine, because the ties from the 70s were really large, and had their own style, and the ties from the 80s and 90s are different. So he had lots of different ties. He didn't wear ties very much later, although for formal events he would, obviously, like most people. If he only wore black at Hamfest, you know, I'm just thinking back because I got a visual memory sort of like he does. I don't remember that very well. I don't know if that's the way it was. I know when we drove up to the Hamfest, he was wearing different clothes than that. He didn't, like, go, you know, because usually we'd drive up the day before. But if he chose black to wear on Hamfest, I didn't notice.
Yeah, it was just something that I always noticed. Just like I said, every time I would see him, he's always wearing black. You know, it was just, okay. Black shirt, black pants, and the black hat, the cowboy hat. So I tell you another story. In 2003, my mom purchased a new Honda, and your dad was looking for a decent used car. And, you know, I would always listen to the check then. My mom would be in the background, and she would be listening as well. And she'd always ask me, is that your friend Dick, you know, on the radio? And I said, yeah, that's him, you know. And somehow, you know, the car came up, and Dick came over, and he purchased the old Honda from my dad, and he was so happy because he was looking for, you know, a decent used car at a very reasonable price, and you know, he got a good price on it, and we were happy to to let him have it. So he was so happy with that. That was the blue little Honda that he had.
Oh, that's terrific. Yeah, he really liked that car. The only issue he ever had with that car was he had an issue with the power steering leaking, and the only thing it needed was a different power steering tube. There was something with the steel braided line that needed to get repaired. But instead of doing that, he ended up repairing it with like a regular tube and coiling it with wire or something like that and soldering it. And that ended up and that car ran until he decided to switch cars. But that doesn't surprise me all that much, because ever since we went to foreign cars, it was a very slow transition. We've been much happier with like Hondas and Toyotas. I tend to go with more Honda, and my parents went with more. Like after he had that Honda, he went from there to a 1999 Toyota, and that's what he stayed with.
Yeah, good stuff. good memories that we have. So, well, it's really nice to hear you on the air tonight. I tell you, it was it added quite a bit to the event.
Well, I wouldn't miss it for the world. I mean, it's a tribute for my dad. How can you not be there? Why would I? I wouldn't want to miss that. So I was really glad I could make it, and that nothing else interfered, so that I could be a part of this.
Yeah, very good. Because occasionally we would hear you Dad would summon you to answer a question about a computer or something like that. You were available to get on the mic, but that was only for a couple of minutes. Then it was back to the tech net. So, we might hear you every so often, but not that often.
Well, there wasn't a second chair in the ham room. Well, exactly. There's no other chair, and basically we didn't have another radio set up, so it was a little bit tricky for me to get on the air at the same time that he was, or we'd have to figure something out. But also, my father and I tended to focus on different technical areas. My dad ended up disliking computers for various reasons. Because early on, the computers, the amount of storage that was available at work was very low, and every time he'd he'd make programs and have them stored, they'd end up getting taken off of the mainframe system and get stored and taken away. And so emotionally, he had more of a disconnection with computers than I did. But he would also always bring computers home from work as a kid. And so I got more of an emotional connection of what could be done with computers. And so I ended up dealing with computers a lot more than he did. And so that's where I ended up focusing more than he ever had. And he really enjoyed the RF end of things. And it's not like I don't enjoy those things and I don't understand those things. I do. I like them. I just didn't focus on them as much because he had that skill. It's sort of like having the understanding of where, finding a place that you fit. So my place where I fit, in terms of the family, was the computer aspect, because nobody else was taking that area over. KB2IQN.
Well, he was very, very proud of your computer expertise, because he would always any question, when it came to the emails or computers or anything like that, he would always default to you. He would say, I'm really pretty light on this. I got to ask my son on that. He's not around right now, but, I'll ask him next time I talk to him. So he obviously thought highly of your computer skills. There was another episode. One day, it was in the summertime. I remember it was pretty nice out. One day, somebody pulls in the driveway, some strange car, and I'm like, who's that? I look at it, and it's your dad. There he is. He's pulling in the driveway. He gets out. He comes walking up. I hey, Dick, what's going on? He goes, I was in the area, I was checking on something. I just figured I'd stop by and, say hello. Okay, fine. We can't say hello. And we got to talking about he knew I was into binocular repair and stuff. And he said, I just happen to have these binoculars here. They're a little out of whack. I said, well, bring them in.
Oh, wow. So that's you. Okay. Now I actually, that's really interesting. Because, he spoke about the binocular repair quite a bit. Because, yeah, he would occasionally drop the binoculars and they'd need to get refocused. And that actually is a difficult skill, apparently. He has a lot of appreciation for that because he attempted to take it apart and, like, figure out how to align them. That apparently is a lot more tricky than it looks.
Is that 2APG?
Well, it can be. The first, you know, I've been fooling around with the binoculars now for probably 30 or 35 years. And the first time that I took one apart, you know, to take a look at it or whatever, and took it apart and put it back together, probably took me 2 weeks to take it apart and put it back together, you know, properly. You know, because it was just, I was learning by seat of the pants experience. And so what took me 2 weeks, you know, in the beginning, now it takes me maybe 45 minutes, you know, to do. And now I do a better job in 45 minutes than it took me 2 weeks to do, you know, in the beginning. But, yeah, we had an interest in optics together, and the binoculars were always a cool thing. Yeah, very good. I want to take an opportunity to see if anyone else actually has a question or comment about my dad. So this is KB2IQN, the son of K2RIW, and wanted to see if anyone else had a question or comment talking about the memorial for K2RIW. Thanks.
WA2EGT.
Yes, please, go ahead.
Yes, are you acknowledging WA2EGT?
Is that WA2EGG? Yes, go ahead.
Thank you. This is Whiskey Alpha 2 Echo Golf Tango. My name is Charlie. You'll have to excuse me. It's been about 16 years since I've used voice. I'm mainly a brass pounder, and I get a little nervous on the radio. I want to extend my condolences to you, Chris, and to your mom. Dick will certainly be missed by many, many people. I did write a rather lengthy comment on the Limark Memorial webpage, probably too lengthy. I think it's comment number 46. I doubt that anyone's going to have the patience to read through it. But just very quickly, your dad mentored me starting when I was 13 years old, and then when I up until I was about 15 years old, and you then invited me to your house, and it was a wonderful time. Again, I did write it up in this comment on the Limark website. It was a beautiful day, a very memorable day for me. And you might be interested to know, let's see, that was about 1970-71. You might be interested in hearing that you were sitting in a seat that was suspended from the top of an archway by an elastic band of some sort, and you were bouncing up and down, and you were just as happy as could be. I remember that. And I also, in my comments, I did mention that I did have dinner at your house. Your mom was very gracious, and if she's listening, if she's awake, this was an opportunity for me to personally say thank you after 50 years of absence. I don't know if the repeater, if it still drops out at this hour, and I don't know if I've enabled the tone here. If you saw this room I'm in right now, this is my lab, my shop, my library, my ham shack, and there's cables all over the place. I tried to check in earlier with this ICOM radio, and this microphone is terrible. So I just had to rig a handy talkie with an amplifier and cables and a small Yagi and a bird termaline watt meter to see what was going on. But here I am. And I just wanted to extend that to you. This is a golden opportunity for me to again say thank you to your mom, and to also say that I knew you 50 years ago. I do have more comments, but back to you and the group here, KB2IQN, this is WA2EGT.
Well, thank you, Charlie. And thank you for making the effort to hook up the rig so you could actually make it up on the repeater tonight. That's really appreciated. I remember bouncing in the doorway, just like you said. I remember that harness very well. A few years later, you'll be interested to know, I had my first soldering experience with the living room couch. I took the soldering gun, like, you know, because I saw my father soldering with the soldering gun, and I took it to one of the cushions and made a little hole in it. Thankfully, my father realized what was going on. It was like, you know, I was just curious and wanted to solder something, and so I think at around age 5, he taught me to solder. So I've known since then. But that's, you know, that's the kind of thing you'd expect you want to like duplicate what your dad does when you're a child. It's sort of like not terribly unexpected after you think about it. It's just another little funny story that like comes up when thinking about that chair. So yeah, back to net. KB2IQN.
Yes, this is Leeway 2EGT. I just have a few more comments.
Yeah, go ahead, Charlie.
Great, thank you, Chris. I would listen to the TechNet and also the recordings that are online. But I do remember, this was quite a few years ago, and it's something that stuck with me. Because it was something that irked me, and it also irked your dad, and it was the overuse of acronyms. And someone used an acronym with him, and he responded with, oh, he said, well, this is clearly a case of UAA. And the person said, what? What do you mean UAA? He said, use all acronyms. And that was beautiful to me. I don't know if you ever used that with you. Oh my goodness, I'm a little nervous here. One other thing, my dad was similar to your dad. He had a curiosity that led him to just incredible places and just a breadth and depth of knowledge and interest. Not that we get to talk about my dad, but just very quickly, I remember in elementary school, since you mentioned the soldering iron, I came home from elementary school, and my dad had his Fisher Chemistry glassware set up on the kitchen table, and it was this massive arrangement. I had no idea what it was, but he had a beaker, and he was focused at the end of a condenser tube. He built a still just for fun. And the pure alcohol was dripping out of this condenser. And I walked in and I looked. I said, Dad, what are you doing? What are you doing? And he looked at me and he said, it's a still. Don't tell your teacher. So I think we have a similar background. But anyway, your dad had an impact on my life, as well as my own dad. And I did write that up in that comment. I have very, very fond memories of your dad, and certainly of that day that I spent at your house. So back to you, Chris.
Oh, very good. I think there were two things that you said. Oh, yeah, the UAA, that's the other one. Yeah, my father used to say that fairly regularly when he got frustrated with acronyms. He had the unfortunate experience of having to go to meetings at work as an electrical engineer where there were so many acronyms that he had he would go into a meeting with a page of all the acronyms that were used, and then he ended up having to deal with, like, acronyms that ended up being acronyms of acronyms. It was literally that bad. He was just swamped. He was, like, bewildered. He would come out of meetings bewildered. But he was detailed enough where acronyms would frustrate him because what the acronyms actually mean would sort of get lost as, you know, as to what milk, what the full meaning of it meant. And for him, the full meaning was the real meaning versus being able to attach the meaning to just some word that's used to actually refer to all of these things, which is the way I tend to work. So for instance, radar has a particular meaning, which means radio detection and ranging. But nobody remembers that word. Even like the radar department that he used to work with would not remember this word. So he'd go into the radar department and occasionally like ask them, like, okay, so what does radar stand for? And like, no one can ask it, you know, and no one can answer it because you end up like remembering the acronym as being the thing, not the full phrase for what the acronym stands for. And so he would rail on that. Let me drop for a second. And I don't blame him. I don't blame him for finding that frustrating because, you know, it's important to actually have understanding for communication to work. So that's part of being able to actually know that things are correct is having the right understanding. And so he would work towards that. And that's a good thing. That diligence is a good thing. But on the other hand, it would be a frustration, you know, that would of how to get to what the meaning was. And your dad like building a still for some experiment, that's pretty cool. I don't see anything, you know, too difficult with that, especially since like people, you know, do alcohol brewing at home for other purposes, for, you know, for actual, you know, like making their own beer and stuff. I don't know why science, you know, for doing things for science is interesting because occasionally it seems like it's something that feels like it's not necessarily right, but it can be. So I kind of get that. Back to you, Charlie, KB2IQN.
KB2IQN in the group. This is WA2EGP. Well, yeah, Chris, it was, you know, doing things whose ultimate purpose is not for profit, just for the satisfaction of doing it. There's a huge value in that. That was a lesson learned. And as far as acronyms go, they drive me crazy too because they can be nondescript and ambiguous. So you're not really conveying any kind of meaning. And just backtracking a little bit, some of the gentlemen made a comment as far as the gentleman who was asking you some insightful questions, which, by the way, I did enjoy it very much because it showed the whole person of your dad by way of those questions. But one question one comment was, you know, as far as the laboratory goes, you know, your dad must have had a huge amount of test equipment, very involved. Something that he taught me, and this was at a very young age, was you don't need all this equipment. He said, if you have enough insight into what's going on, and one of them is in frequency modulation, you know, somebody might have an FM deviation meter. Well, you really don't need that. You can use something called a carrier null method to determine what the deviation is. If you have a down converted to a communications receiver with a narrow enough filter and you can see the spectral content of the signal, you can do this. And I did do this. Maybe just a few years after talking with your dad. But it was, again, it was that insight that he relied on. In my impression, he did not surround himself with a slew of test equipment. Back to you, Chris.
Well, at least lately, I haven't seen a whole lot of test equipment, believe it or not. There's various test equipment in the basement, but at least in this room, there isn't very much. It's mostly just radios, or if, you know, a few DVMs, like, you know, digital voltmeters. That's pretty much it. We have an oscilloscope in the basement. We use that. You know, we have one of the prototype spectrum analyzers from Altech. He gave away, I guess, the one that he used to have in here that was a full unit. There's not much. Believe it or not, not lately. But he wasn't, again, he wasn't using that stuff for the last few years. So, right now, the test equipment that I see is pretty minimal. I just want to check in with Roy, see if he's still around. AC2GS, this is KB2IQN.
Yeah, Chris, I'm around. I'm listening to this and enjoying the experience.
Okay, roger that. Just checking. Just making, like, you know, seeing where we are. Cool. All right. I guess back to you, Charlie, to see if there's any other questions you might have or other comments you might have. And I can't think of anything else to say at the moment. KB2IQN.
Yes, Chris, this is WA2EGT. As a matter of fact, yes, I was taken back when I heard that you said your dad's one of the comedians that he likes was George Carlin. And that surprised me because George Carlin was, from my view, he was very progressive and certainly a rebel. Certainly a rebel. And I just, you know, listening to your dad, I didn't see that. How do you make that connection? Over.
Well, George Carlin, if you recall, was, I think he was very religious before he became a comedian, if I remember right. So he was someone that bucked his own conservatism in becoming a comedian. And part of humor is dealing with pain, is part of the whole point of humor on the unconscious level, where it's, for instance, to give you an example, one of the things that happens to me is if I go to a funeral, this used to happen anyway, if I go to a funeral and I see a wake and I see the body, sometimes it will look to me like a mannequin and it will look silly and I will actually start laughing. But that laughter is not funny, it's pain. It's my own mind sort of like switching something that's painful into something that it's got some other meaning, and so now it's become something tolerable. So that, I think, is part of why George Carlin ended up bucking his own conservatism, because, like, you know, he kept seeing that the logic for the religion he was looking at really didn't work. And so this is something where George Carlin was actually using logic as the part of his humor, and this is where it really fit, I believe, in terms of my father really connecting with him. And it's one of the reasons I connect with George Carlin as well. Back to you, Charlie, KB2IQN.
Okay, excuse me. Okay, Chris, that's an interesting observation. It never occurred to me. I looked at more of George Carlin's rebellious side, political, social, very political. And again, I didn't make that connection with your dad, so that's what threw me off. I could go on here. I don't want to hog this. There might be other people. If you guys stay on longer, perhaps something will occur to me. I thank you very much for your time, Chris. And again, my condolences to you and to your mom. And by the way, if your mom does read the comment that I placed on the Weimar website, please tell her to have mercy on me. I do remember that she's an English teacher. Back to you.
I wouldn't worry, Charlie. But I've read some of the comments on the Weimark website. I haven't read them all yet. I will pass this by her just so that she has an opportunity to see it. But she won't come down on you for I wouldn't worry about that. But yeah, in terms of George Carlin, I don't disagree. I think you're right that he was, you know, rebellious later, but rebellion comes for a reason. Like, you don't, you know, people aren't just rebellious for no reason. It, like, he was rebelling against certain things. Like, for instance, he was rebellious against the voting being pointless, or, like, you know, not pointless in terms of, he said, fake choice, I think is what he called it, something along those lines, where what we, in this country, we end up voting for personalities that make decisions, but we don't actually vote directly on bills, unless it's a local vote, but at the upper levels, we're just voting on personality that makes choices for us, and that doesn't really work. Where other countries, actually, you know, you get to vote on individual bills, you get to choose the policy for the country at a personal level. Well, we don't get that option here. And so this is where George Collin really thought that that was wrong. And I agree with that. That's something I think is worth rebelling on because and so forth. I think so. I think there are certain things that really do fit where there's logic behind the rebellion. It's not just rebelliousness. So yes, I agree that it is rebellion, but I think there's logic behind it. I'll switch it back to the, send it back to the net, see if anyone else has any comments. So AC2GS, this is KB2IQN.
Thank you very much, Chris. I thought I would read a comment. Our chat room is active, and Chris C. Left a comment, so I thought I would read it to the rest of you since we're the only two people in the chat room. He wrote, I loved how Dick would highlight an adjective with his voice to reflect its significance. For example, the distance of the closest galaxy is very far away, and he would never exaggerate or embellish a story itself. He would tell it exactly as it was with, of course, calculated precision. And he also said, feel free to share, and I'm taking the test next month, and as you know, setting up my shack in Dick's honor. He also asked me to ask you if there are any pictures of the shack around.
Oh, boy. Okay. Well, probably not. The only picture of the shack is on the front page of QST from a long time ago, and it was staged at that time. So, in truth, the shack is quite messy. My father was not an organized person, so I have really considered taking pictures and, like, trying to, explain certain things about, like, what my father was like and how he lived and so forth, but it's not simple to do it because it wasn't left in a way in which that would be the right thing to do, if that makes sense.
No, it makes perfect sense. I had a conversation about that with your father once because I have a QRZ page where I proudly took snapshots of my shack, and I was talking to him about it and asking him, and he told me basically the same thing. He says his shack is just too messy. He says if he fixes it up, he said maybe he'll take pictures, but right now it was too messy. So, I understand that.
So, yeah, there's going to be a bunch of things to do. There's a lot to go through. And one of the things that I've been hearing about, which I think has some truth, is something called as inside, so outside. So it's like if you have a mess on the outside, you have a mess on the inside, where, how we live on the outside is a reflection of how we're living on the inside. So if there is baggage, then there's baggage in both directions. And so trying to, figure out how to handle that is a long term thing, but something I've been working towards for a while.
Yeah, I mean, trying to figure out the human mind, the human soul is intriguing to try, but I don't know if we've quite figured it out yet. We're very complicated things.
Well, there's certainly hints, and there's certainly, like, resources that can help. Interesting. My father's got, had a whole bunch of bird slugs for watt meter, and I just found a watt meter, so it's trying to... There's an umpteen level of, number of pieces of equipment to figure out what they are, and the person that owned them is no longer available to ask. This is going to be another interesting portion of handling all this.
Yeah, I've talked to people who've almost have a hobby of dealing with people who've passed away, and their loved ones aren't amateur radio operators, so they don't quite know what to do with any of this stuff, and so there are people who've developed the ability to kind of orchestrate those sort of things. Yeah, we all leave little bits of ourselves behind without proper instructions afterwards. That's part of human nature. You know, some people don't collect anything. Some people travel light. Some people travel very heavy.
Yeah, of all the really interesting things I've been trying to get into is I've been trying to get into backpacking, which is the ultimate travel light, if you will, trying to understand how to do it. I still haven't done it yet. I'm slowly getting more and more skills towards it, but it's an interesting practice. And part of backpacking is not just the physical aspect of it, because it composes camping as well as hiking. But there's a huge mental aspect to it, which I've been trying to understand, which is like being out in the woods for days at a time where you're away and you need to be able to live with yourself without contact with other people for several days, you know, at a stretch. And this can actually apparently wear on you mentally. And, you know, likewise with all this COVID-19 stuff, it's wearing on people mentally, where like about 30% of the people are showing strong signs of anxiety and depression. So this is something, it's sort of connected in a way. This is what I've been thinking about for the last few weeks.
AC2GS, well, you know, we're social creatures. You can't really, for the most part, separate people and not have side effects. And as you mentioned, the amount of violence and depression and all kinds of emotional stress is very high, and people were dealing with it in different ways. Some people are drinking it away, and that doesn't help. Some people are using pills, and other people are using denial, and other people are just waiting for the next shoe to drop. It's these are scary times we live in, unfortunately, and the social network we have is important. And, you know, in a way, that's the nice thing about radio. It might not be a substitute for a social interaction, but it's a nice thing to have available as well.
Yeah, thankfully, exercise is also a help with all this, because it allows getting outside and that getting out and actually like getting a walk in and getting some sunlight seems to be one of the things that is very helpful at this time if it's possible. So that's one of the things I would recommend. And trying to stay healthy and connected to family if possible as well.
Yeah, I would agree with you, Chris. You know, social distancing, you can still go outside just as long as you keep your distance and proper protection and what have you. And that's probably much better than, you know, cowering someplace. Because, again, we're not kind of wired to just kind of sit in a little room. It goes against most people's basic nature. It increases their stress level, and that causes other problems. So, yeah, exercise is always a good stress reducer, and sunlight is nice. Vitamin D is very useful. So I think you're right on that.
Yeah, I think you also nail on the head when it comes to man being a social creature, because there's a there's a set of TED Talks, and I think one of the people that was on either 60 Minutes or 2020, I forget, specifically